Patty DeGangi and Shirley Gutkowski are known for bringing their Midwestern sensibility to today's health issues with an eye towards the future. With decades of experience in clinical dental hygiene, writing about it, speaking on it, and pondering over all aspects of it, Patty and Shirley challenge dental hygienists to reach higher levels of revolutionary thinking to meet 21st century patient needs, wants, and expectations. Beware, their infectious excitement, it can be catchy.
Hi, Shirley. Here we are again.
Hi, Patty.
Modern Millennial Hygienist.
Hey, I'm here. We've got another
excellent.
Hot
you know,
topic
I, this,
today.
I want to talk to you about something today that I know, in fact, I defer to you. And that's the whole idea of research. You're like, okay, no offense, but you're kind of a research geek. Yet, you know, this whole thing around research is really crazy because I got to be honest with you. I have this whole evidence-based decision-making, evidence-based practice, all these different things that are said. It's a crack up because I see them used and abused. And, okay, let me say three statements and see what people think. Aging is a risk factor for oral cancer. Everyone needs to floss. And restorative dentistry restores oral health. So, are those true statements?
Show me the proof, right?
Show me the truth. What's the science behind them? Well, what I've seen is science manipulated. Science used for, you know, just whatever it is that somebody wants to make it used.
Well, yeah.
Or to say it another way, and I just said this to my husband at dinner last night because he was saying, you know, there was this thing on TV that said, you know, the five things that waste time are email and texting. And you know why he said that and he was thrilled with that? Is because he doesn't like to email. He doesn't like to text. So what it is he found something that supported his opinion, and therefore that made it science. How much do we do that in dentistry? How much do we do that in healthcare? All the way around.
We do it a lot, and it just kind of reminds me of the article that we wrote a few months ago about perio charting and and how upset everybody was and the sacred cow part of it. And they just won't believe anything that hasn't been written about for the last 75 years. It's just nuts. Every time I start a new topic on, or somebody else does on one of these internet groups, they're like, well, where's the research? I hope there's research. And I feel like saying, where's the research that says it doesn't work, you know?
Well, you know, and where's the research for a whole bunch of stuff that we do? Where's the research on when we take x-rays once a year? Where's the research on so many things that we do? Where's the research on vital signs? Oh, wait, we got lots of research on vital signs. And we certainly were taught that in school, but we don't do that. Why not? Oh, that's interesting. Then the discussion becomes time. How can we have research? And the thing is do we really have time to know the research in clinical practice? Let's say, for example, and again, as people that know me, they'll know that this is my own situation, but I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. What does that mean?
Yes.
What does that mean to the average person? What kind of oral health risk does that give me? And what kind of a systemic risk could you be somebody could be creating for me by not knowing what it's about? Well, because, again, it's my situation, I know a lot about it, but no matter what, I might know about what I have, but what about what somebody else has? So now they're sitting in my chair, so let's talk about the process of evidence-based decision-making. Okay, what does that really mean? Well, you know, it's real structure. And Shirley, do you have any experience with hygienist-like and structure?
As I've said in the past, we are a rulesy bunch. We like our little rules. But this new millennial kind of an aspect to everything is an interesting aspect, and it's that they are more tech savvy, and they are now working in an environment where their boss isn't the expert, that their phone is the expert, and they can find out anything they want, even about Hashimoto's thyroiditis if they can spell it, and and get a decent-ish answer.
Yes, exactly. Or they could get, like I saw, I saw this on Facebook the other day. Now, of course, Facebook being the authoritative resource that it is, Yeah, but you know what? It interests me because the name of the book is Hashimoto's Thyroiditis, Lifestyle Interventions for Finding and Treating the Root Cause. Whoa, baby, I have that. I want to know this. So, and here's what's on Facebook. It was on the New York bestsellers list for 2 months in a row. Well, that must be credible, wow. Huh? You know, we think as dental hygienists that, you know, we're not as susceptible to the hype that's out there, but guess what we are? So I clicked over from the link again on Facebook, and I went to Amazon, and Amazon's front page that says, Hashimoto's is more than hypothyroidism. More patients with Hashis will present with la, 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 and include gum disorders. Whoa, there we go, dental hygienist stuff comes out. Thing is that, again, I don't know if I don't know about it in the first place, this is, well, I can look at this two ways, that this is automatically hype, and that's not correct, or it's automatically scientific, and that's not correct either. But it really made me think about is, you know, how feasible is evidence-based decision-making? Because, yeah, you can get some information by looking it up on your phone, but doesn't the result depend on how you ask the question?
It does. It does a lot. And the way that dental hygienists like to use, and dentists too, it's not so bad with dentists for some reason, but hygienists especially like to use all of this evidence-based talk with like a little club. You can't use it. You can't use it. You can't use it. There's not enough research. They've never looked. They don't ever look. I stopped giving references, reference sheets for my programs because nobody ever looks. Nobody complained that I stopped giving it. So it's a crazy kind of a system that we have here. And if you ask the wrong question, you may get an answer from somebody like Dr. Undershirt and his and his take on Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and that it comes from, you know, clipping your toenails on a Tuesday. and you just don't know. Just because he's a doctor doesn't make it credible. And you have to, and we learn where to find research from when we're in school. So we have more to do than we think.
Well, the thing is that what I really get concerned about, though, is where I've seen this whole evidence thing being used as a mallet to smack people over the head. And we were all affected by it in ways that sometimes, frequently, we don't know. Now, this whole idea of using laser-assisted periodontal therapy, lots of hygienists use it, lots of doctors use
yes.
it. Yet, in some circles, it's still controversial. I wrote an article a couple years ago on lasers, and it's not because it was my expertise, but we did it from the point of view of just learning about it because I had an opportunity. I could have written about abortion and not have as much emotion. I couldn't believe it when I got these different sides of this issue, and it's crazy. Yet because of this emotional way of looking at things versus the scientific way, I dug a little deeper. And one of the things that I know was the case is there used to be a code for gingival curettage in the CDT and the coding book back in the early versions.
Yeah.
That's one of those codes that got removed. So I looked try to find out why was that code removed. I mean, I think in California, there is a specialty and a course you have to take and special licensing, whatever it is. It really doesn't matter because the point of it is that when I looked farther into it, and as I sat in the coding committees, the people that I found that were really fighting this idea of laser-assisted periodontal therapy was AAP, the American Academy of Periodontology. And it's like, well, why would they say it? Well, they say the reason is science. But is it science? Because this laser curettage, I mean, this gingival curettage code that used to be there, they have a statement. You can go right to AAP's website, and the statement is still there. Now, that statement's from 2002. And I'm saying that in the beginning because let's just say there is a part of it that was written in the very beginning of this century. Yet when I looked at that paper, and see, that's the other thing about research. It's really looking at it and reading it, is the references for that position, there wasn't any from this century. There weren't even that many from the second half of the last century. Their references went from 1927 to 52 to 54. We had a couple in the 90s, but that's what they were using. And really what I saw and what I really believed on that one is It wasn't evidence-based decision-making where we find the evidence to find the answers. It was feeling like you already know the answers and then finding the evidence that supports what you believe.
To support it, yeah, the opposite,
yeah.
Right.
And you know what? Any crazy thing, like you said, Dr. Undershirt, you know, using you know, whatever to fix Hashimoto's, bet you there's probably more than one reference on that. How crazy
yes.
is that?
And yeah, it is kind of crazy.
What really concerns me about it is something else that's going on that a lot of people don't know. And that's about where we're going with our electronic health world. Now, in the medical side that's farther along in electronic health records, this is much better known. In that side, practitioners, physicians, and different people are now being paid based on how closely they adhere to something called best practices. Now, what's a best practice? Well, it's based on a clinical treatment guideline. Well, where do clinical treatment guidelines come from? Well, generally, you bring a bunch of experts together. Of course, who decides what an expert is? And they look at the scientific literature, and then they decide which of the treatments are the most helpful for the greatest number of people, okay? And it carries the official backing of that society, and so then the guidelines are out there. Now, what it's supposed to be is those guidelines are supposed to help practitioners make decisions. This is happening in dentistry. The ADA Center for Evidence-Based Decision-Making is creating these guidelines. So far, there's about, I don't know, there's 8 or 9 guidelines that are on fluoride, they're on oral cancer, they're on alternative ways of caries management, they're on, what's really interesting, there's mostly on things that are most often in the purview of a dental hygienist, but what's really something of concern is ADA has decided which of their experts have decided that are going to create these mm-hmm. clinical guidelines that are going to come through as best practices. Because, see, the insurance industry and the other payers see these guidelines that way. So what's going to happen is all of us as practitioners will be held to that standard. And it's like it's all in the hands of ADA at this point. And then I question, is an evidence-based process going on, or is it that same thing, this is what we believe, so now let's find the evidence to support what we already believe? Shirley, you read a lot of science. You read a lot of this stuff. You know what the evidence is. And I know you also read a lot on products and procedures and thought processes that are newer. Do we have as much information, say, on xylitol as we do on fluoride?
No, we don't. Guess why? We've been studying fluoride since forever long, you know, and not so much for xylitol. It's newer. So we're never going to have the same. Well, it's going to be a while, but people are still funding fluoride studies, so they're going to still get answers that say fluoride is good, and they're still missing the boat about biofilm management. So that's a whole nother topic, Patty.
So you know what, though, it really is coming back to that same talk. If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Uh-huh.
And that's the whole thing is so then when I hear people say is they'll take particular that fluoride issue. One of the things about the guidelines, ADA came up with the first guideline they ever came up with was on fluoride. Even though there's about a billion other things they could write guidelines on, they updated the fluoride guideline. And I asked, why did they do that? It's like, well, there's so much new about fluoride. I'm like, really? What would that be? It's really interesting how this is all playing out for all of us. But it really is going to affect us in the longer run because where we're moving toward is a system where we're to be paid for how healthy people become. And that's how all of these best practices and all kinds of things are involved in it. So this idea that we don't pay attention to it, that's where the problem is. Or the idea that we use the whole idea of evidence as a cudgel to beat each other over the head with. Really?
Mm-hmm.
How come the evidence is always weighed it is at least as much opinion-based as it is science? Because how many people read all the science? I love what you said about the references. I stopped putting references on the bottom of my slides when I speak. And there, I explain to the audiences all the time, the reason I do it is just because somebody has something, you know, really little written on the bottom of their slide doesn't mean it's more scientific. What it means is they know how to use a little font. Doesn't make it scientific.
There's just so much to be said for this right now. You've opened up so many doors, and I'm real excited to find out if other people are picking up on some of the things that we talked about today. And I'm really excited to see what the comments are down in the comment section below this article.
Yeah, because, you know, we really are asking more questions. When we talk a little bit more in, you know, sentences and rather than asking questions. But in the articles, we really try to ask questions. Because, see, that's
right.
What the key of being a modern millennial hygienist really is it's about asking the question. That's the hallmark. Continue to search for answers, not thinking we already know the answers. That's why we are as interested in your thoughts on this as anything we think ourselves. And that's why in another future session, we're going to look at compensation, because, boy, is that ever something we all can see really differently. But it's time to talk about it and visit what that actually means. What is compensation?
I'm with you. Can't wait.
I know. I'm enjoying these. I really glad that I have the pleasure of doing this with you, Shirley, and I look forward again to hearing from everybody else. So bye for this time.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio.